don't get it twisted. Let me be clear about this. The first great song to have a breakbeat in it that was used everywhere in the Bronx at the birth of hip hop was Good Times by Chic.
This is a journey into sound, a journey which along the way will bring you a new color, new dimension, new value. Speaking of new dimensions, did you know that a popular disco song could be used as a device for punching holes in the time-space continuum? Look alive, Albert Einstein! Get a job, Stephen Hawking! We're the Pop Vultures and we're here to blow your mind! Without the use of drugs.
Come on, Hank, sing that song. Check it out, I'm the C-A-S-N, the O-V-A, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1", and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a D. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got two big guns, that definitely ain't the whack. I got a Lincoln Continental, and some new Cadillac. So
my dear friend Garth, a.k.a. Pimp Mississippi Messiah, a.k.a. the debauched thespian Yo, also known as Bedtime Bear, will you please explain to me what a breakbeat is?
Okay. It's the best section or chunk of any given song. It's like the golden hour. It's like the golden seconds. It's like the best thing in the song. And what DJs used to do back in the 70s when this used to happen was they created a way to mix live that 20, 30 second chunk of time over and over again, mix it back and forth. Currently today you see them do it on turntables with regularity. Back then it was a brand new thing, so they'd take that 30 seconds of time on one turntable and let it play while setting up an identical record, identical song on another turntable, queuing up the beginning of that same section of time, and then once the first turntable was done with that section, play it again seamlessly. So it just seemed like this one section just kept going. You can go on for 10 minutes straight with this one section. And that was a break in it. And also, later on, the term came to mean that's what you used to break dance to. The B-boys would play a breakbeat so we could break
dance. Is that where the term breakdancing came from?
The term breakdancing, you know, it's controversial. Some people say it came from break in terms of on the floor, break the action, break whatever it is, like you stop time and you break it, you know what I'm saying? Like whatever the normal stuff is going on, you break the time, you know?
That's kind of deep.
One. Yeah.
Like you create another dimension?
Yes.
The repetitive quality of DJ music was to help the dancers in a sense. Like, it was because of the dancing that was going on. Like,
yeah, at first, that's what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, it became much more apparent that was necessary because then you started having MCs. And earlier stuff, you know, the MCs were very rudimentary. They'd basically be like, all right, party people, throw your hands up in the air and wave them like you just don't care. And you couldn't really have, like, lyrics underneath that kind of distracting
right
from the moment. And that just transformed into people started going, okay, you know, we can do some party stuff to this. And I'll start, you know, and they started, like, using poetry, you know, rhyming poetry over, you know, looped breakbeats. And you can, as you can see, 20-something years later, where we're at with that.
Like it would come a period during the party where the MCs would go and have a good time going to crowd. And at that time, it was just me and Disco B. We'd be playing the music. But then if I was getting ready to play, like, the bells, the Mardi Gras or playing Apache, Cowboy come to the mic. Because right from there, we get ready to set it off, and Cowboy would lead the set off. 99% of the time, Cowboy would lead the set off. And we would go from that to my manually operated drum box, which was the beatbox, you know. They had to build the rhyme structure around what I was doing. The only key was that I couldn't miss a beat, so now I had to really know my shit. So it was like, if I skipped the beat while he was saying the rhyme, I could fuck the whole routine up.
So it's not a chicken and egg thing. It was definitely the DJ who came first.
It was absolutely the DJ that came first. And some people don't know this, but the DJs actually began with the sound systems of Jamaica.
What do you mean?
The sound systems. In Jamaica, they would build these really, really huge boxes, cabinet speakers. And they were sound boys, and they basically were, you know, they pioneered the whole idea of DJs, dubs, beat.
Actually, didn't they kind of do rapping before rapping?
They did toasting, yes, that's right. They did toasting, that's right. And then those cats came across New York City style and influenced all of that stuff, and then American DJs and young cats took it on.
Was that because of Jamaican immigration or Dominican immigration or what?
Definitely Jamaican. Jamaican West Indian. Definitely. Absolutely.
So also, like, having rapping duels was also a thing, right?
Sure. Rapping duels was huge.
Is that what you actually called it?
No, we didn't call them rapping
duels.
What would you call it? You know, battles.
A battle?
There's always battles.
That sounds cool.
Battling. Battling was dance, battling was lyrics. You would battle another MC.
Right.
And at that point, you call them master of ceremonies, mic controller. You know, that's what MC connotated. I mean, it was kind of cool back then. I mean, because you'd walk down the street, and instead of, like, getting into a gunfight, you know, you'd stop and you'd look at each other as like, and you slowly whip out your white gloves and you put them on finger by finger while you're looking at each other. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what? What? And then you start popping and locking, and that's it. It's a battle on right there on the street, in a subway, anywhere, yo. It's a much more positive way of getting teen angst out. But I digress. Breakbeats, though. James Brown has so many breakbeats that he's created. It's ridiculous. One of the best ones is the Funky Drummer. There's a part in the song where, you know, he's like just singing and he's, you know, he talks to the drummer. This is after he expresses to the band, you know, that he has an interest in giving the drummer some. And he's asking and requiring of them, hey, should I give the drummer some? And they're like, yeah, man, give it to him. Should I give the drummer some? Yeah! Give the drummer some! Yeah! Can I give the drummer some?
One more time, I want to give the drummer some of this funky soul we got here. You don't have to do no soloing, brother, just keep what you got. Don't turn it loose, because it's a mother. When I count to four, I want everybody to lay out and let the drummer go. And when I count to four, I want you to come back in. One, two, three, four, get it! Ain't it funky? Ain't it funky? Ain't it funky? Ain't it funky? A 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody's used that. DOC, Hammer. Sinead O'Connor had Stretched on Your Grave on her first album, produced by Public Enemy's Chuck D. And they used, and that was that was the Funky Drummer. Yeah, but slowed down from its original, probably another 10 beats per second.
Right.
So it was boom, boom, boom,
boom, boom.
Just they cut it.
I am stretched on your grave.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. So that's a break. It's a break.
And will lie there forever.
That's a breakbeat. It's a break in any particular song that is like the golden, danceable, perfect thing that a DJ looks for.
Okay. It can also be used as like a loop or a sample, but that's like a kind of a different definition.
It's kind of a different definition, right. Yes. But the essence of the breakbeat is that's the break. That's the time in any particular song that you know.
Okay. So I want to talk more about that, but I do kind of want to go back to the sidewalk in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still hanging out with those two guys that put on their gloves. And I want to know what happened. Like, okay, A, are we talking like late 70s?
Yes. We're talking late 70s, very, very early 80s. So
I didn't know Kangol went back that far.
Yeah, it did.
Hmm.
Yeah, it did. There's actually some really great books. You have to look for them and find them. But there's books of documentaries of hip-hop fashion of those times.
Yeah.
And yeah, you see Brothers Rock in the furry Kangos with the Kazal glasses and the B-boy stance, you know. It's tight, and I remember that, you know. I was, you know, my boy Fred, we used to call him Fly Freddy, because he was always dressed to the hilt in the latest Flyers gear. And, you know, he had Kango Kazal down, just for like every day of the week, you know.
So Kangols are
the hats.
Hats, right.
Kazals are glasses.
Okay.
Big,
like Run DMC. Right.
Yeah, used to first rock them. When you first saw Run DMC, DMC used to rock Kazals like crazy. Yeah.
That was his trademark.
That was his trademark Kazal.
Cool about like about fashion and street fashion is like the way that people take stuff and totally use it the wrong way. Like seriously, those have got to be the nerdiest glasses in the world, next to maybe like Stephen Hawking's glasses or something.
Right, yeah.
You know,
and acid like, wash jeans was a bad time in our life too, you know.
But it the was way like, that like people can make it cool by just saying this is cool.
To an extent I agree with you, but Kazals, I think you know, back then, I think they actually looked really cool to people. Kind of like how, like I said, like acid wash looked good to people for a minute there. I mean, what in the hell were we thinking?
Coolness is in the eye of the beholder.
Thank you. But at that very moment in time, right, acid wash was hot. You can go get laid while rocking an acid wash set. You
right.
know, because people, oh my God, girl, who that with the acid wash?
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Cause I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks.
It really was a case where murder and attempted murder was not like it is today. You know, you can get shot today by wearing the wrong colors or, you know, walking down the wrong street. And back then, this wonderful new thing called hip-hop culture and breakdancing gave this fantastic outlet to young kids like myself who would otherwise maybe try to join a gang and do something stupid. But even back then, there were like switchblade fights and such. And one of the greatest memories I had was just watching a whole bunch of young B-boys walking around in the style with their white gloves in their back pockets, you know, because the white gloves, that signified, number one, I know I can get down. I know I can get down. You want to try come test me? That's another story. And then also, you know, you had lots of enemies in there. It's like, wow, yo, you know, Ball Busters is battling, you know, Marble Hill Crew. Yo, where they at? Oh, they're in the parking lot at Junior High School 141. Yo! And before you know it, everybody shows up there at 6 o'clock when the sun is going down and the streetlights come on, because it has a better ambient effect, and you can splice in the turntables and amplifier system to the streetlights to use it for the music playback. But unless you had a boombox with a fresh supply of batteries, but they were expensive to the average B-boy back then. I mean, it's either, you know what, people talk is smack, they get into an argument, it's like, all right, you know what, 5 o'clock, ball courts. Oh, it's on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then all of a sudden it gets around to people and there's a crowd there And then the cats always show up at like 5:10, 5:15, you know, fashionably late. Somehow their boys have magically set up a sound system or whatever, and it is on, and they get their whole crew behind them. So their crew backs them up. So the crew is dancing. So it was crew on crew, but in specific, it's this one-on-one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I said, it was not uncommon to be walking down the street and seeing someone who you've been just mortal dance enemies with for a long time and just not say a word and just go to the gloves. Just get to the gloves.
That is so sexy.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing. And then, you know, like, do stuff like, you know, they have the shorties, right? Either their girlfriends or the young kids who were, like, aspiring to be like them. They would be the ones to go and find the cardboard out of the dumpsters. Because you rip the cardboard, you have to find a good enough piece of box. And you rip the box up in such a way that it spreads out as flat and consistent as possible. Because that's what you didn't want to spin and do all that stuff on the asphalt. So you have the shorties, you know what I'm saying, going out and finding cardboard. And you know, and any place you could find cardboard, basically you can get down.
What's the weirdest breakbeat you ever heard? Like the most random one?
That's a really tough one because there's so many of them. I know that the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan uses a lot of interesting breakbeats, and so does Timbaland. Missy Elliott's producer. So does Busta Rhymes, as people kind of think of it. There was a song on Busta Rhymes' Extinction Level Event album, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, and he sampled the original Psycho theme, the violins, you know, you know, and the violins are going, and he sampled that, and he came out with this song called Give Me Some More. And the beat was just crazy, but it worked with the Psycho sample. So, you know, Busta's just off the wall in the first place. So he can take that sample and make something of it. So it's a very fast-moving song. It's like, y'all niggas had enough? Give me some more. Split for the weed at? Give me some more. I know your niggas need that. Give me some more. Even though we're making money, you can give me some more. You know, and that was like all of that to the Psycho thing. The Psycho theme just looped over and over again. And that was a banana sample. I was like, well, right on, that works.
I gotta be the greatest myself. Come on, come on, yeah, come on. Yeah, nigga, what a surprise. Give you something, make that nigga close both of your eyes.
I'm gonna drive Garth home now in my sweet ride. Bedtime Bear needs his bottle. But while I'm gone, I want you all to just lie back and enjoy the postmodern strains of Paid in Full by Eric B., featuring Ofra Haza.
This is a journey into sound. This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value. When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
Would you mind saying that again?
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Start talking about the White Stripes, I get really dumb because I love them truly. And I think that when you love a band like deeply, you get really, really stupid. I try to explain it and I have to say, listen to the record. Just listen to the record. And then, of course, people listen to the record and they go, eh, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, God, you don't get it. You don't get it. We're not living in the same world.
Here we are. No one else, we walk to school all by ourselves. There's dirt on our uniforms from chasing all the ants and worms. We clean up and now it's time to learn.
What I truly love at the heart of it is Jack White's voice. Jack White has a voice that either you don't particularly think it's very special, it's just another voice, or it's almost like a pathway into a secret chamber of your own heart that you've never entered. That's how his voice affects me. It takes me to another life that I only live in my dreams.
We don't notice any time pass. We don't notice anything. We sit side by side in every class. Teacher thinks that I sound funny, but she likes the way you sing. Tonight I'll dream while I'm in bed, when silly thoughts go through my head about the bugs and alphabet. When I wake tomorrow, I'll bet that you and I will walk together again. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Yeah, Meg White is an amateur drummer, there's no question about it. But with Jack, she's the perfect drummer, and I think he would be a much less interesting musician without her. And I didn't really understand the genius and importance of Meg until I saw them live. And then I understood completely what it is that Meg and Jack were married, and they were in love, and I think he's still completely in love with her, and they understand each other on a, like, cellular level. The sexual chemistry between them is what drives the band, and that's why he drops down onto his knees and practically, like, catches fire on his solos. I guess that I'm kind of saying that part of being a great musician goes way, way, way beyond technique.
I wanna be the boy to warm your mother's heart. I'm so scared to take you away. I try to win her over right from the start, but something always got in the way. We've been sitting in your backyard for hours, but she won't even come out and say hi. While my mother baked a little cake for you, and even dreaded when you said goodbye. What kind of car wheels do I have to pull? What kind of jokes should I lay out of now? I'm inclined to go finish high school just to make a notice that I'm around.
Frankly, if you go around listening to the White Stripes and Bjork all day long, you pretty much do end up stupid. And I'm sorry, Kate. It's the same way with junkies. Junkies will forever defend heroin, but they know full well that it has reduced them to a mere shadow of their former selves.
I'm afraid to even open my eyes, because I really don't want her to judge me. I want her to really know who I am. And then and only then will she love me. Well, at least that was the plan.
Gotta say, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster for me in my relationship with the White Stripes, and I don't want to go all self-indulgent on you, but that is how I feel about the White Stripes, and that's how I felt when I first found them. I was fortunate that I found them before they were, you know, MTV stars. They were, I didn't even know who they were. I guess I found out eventually they were these two kids from Detroit who were supposedly married, but, I mean, supposedly brother and sister, but then maybe they were married and you didn't know. And to me, they were just a great band. A lot of people first got exposed to them, on the cover of Spin or on MTV or whatever, as part of the sort of like garage revival of the, you know, 2001 or whatever, along with the Strokes and the Hives and the Vines and like all these sort of like slightly more whack bands, I feel. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have been really prejudiced against them because of the context in which they arrived. I seriously believe, though, that, like, eventually, after all the dust settles, you know, that that the White Stripes' music is going to stand alone of all those bands as being sort of, like, true and timeless quality music.
Ha
I was listening to the White Stripes. It reminds me of something, and I keep on thinking as I listen to the next song, which sounded like the song before that. And then after listening through these two CDs, I just realized that it reminds me of really bad music. Really bad music now is supposed to be cool. I know people who really are into the, like, the worse the music is, the more underproduced it is, the more unable to play their instruments the person is, the greater the music is. And I just think that is crap. Mm-hmm. The White Stripes, I mean, it's like somebody forgot to get a bass player. There's, you know, someone forgot to buy new cymbals. You know, I could listen to one song for like maybe half of the song. I mean, then I'm basically done.
Thanks for sharing, Vinny. You know, I may be a junkie, it's true, but at least I don't smoke crack. For some insight into the other big The Band, I think I'll call my best girlfriend and the secret sixth stroke, Hillary Casablanca Jagger Nacho Supreme.
My friend Fiona hates the Strokes so much because she thinks that they're not talented. She thinks that they can't play. And first of all, I think that they're pretty good playing. I think that they're musically pretty tight. But also, I kind of think, like, so what if a song has simplicity?
Yeah, who cares if they can't play? Whatever.
They can play.
But even if they couldn't, do I give a shit?
They do have the kind of metronomic patterns to their songs.
It's a little repetitive at times.
That's okay. Sounds
like a nursery rhyme.
Take a look at Waiting for My Man from Velvet Underground, which is the same tone.
Yeah, because they totally ripped it off.
I think it's okay if a song is simple.
Oh, sure, of course.
And she doesn't. She thinks it has to be, there has to be more complexity to a song.
I totally disagree.
I do too. And to cite another format, Ad Reinhardt is a painter who will do a canvas in all black.
That's very White Stripes of him.
Yeah!
Fiona doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm sorry.
She's full of it.
She totally is.
Fiona.
This production is so bad, good. It kind of lends this sheen of intelligence and intellectualism. It has all kinds of, like, it's like a signifier, actually, of a whole bunch of other stuff that gives them an authenticity they really don't deserve, you know? I mean, considering their background and everything, and that's kind of cool. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking way over my head.
I am not.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying. That's why I like them. That's why I like all these bands.
And that's why I like you, Hillary. Pop Vultures is produced by Prairie Home Productions and presented by Minnesota Public Radio. This show was brought to you by the colors red, white, and black. Is black a color? Today's guests were Vinny and the Stardusters, Hillary Churchill, and Garth Belcon. The creative team is Kay Slush, New Jack Keeler, Lady Tiffany Crystal, known before the change as DJ T-Money, OG Keeler, and me, Lil Kate. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the people who actually expressed them. And if you try to sue Minnesota Public Radio, you will surely be crushed, like a tiny spark! Which is also the name of this song by Brendan Benson, who's super hot. Until next time, as Dusty Street said, fly low and avoid the radar.
American Public Media.